When they go low, we go high.
With those seven simple words, Michelle Obama took center stage at the 2016 Democratic Convention.
I want a president who will teach our children that everyone in this country matters. A president who truly believes in the vision that our founders put forth all those years ago, that we are all created equal, each a beloved part of the great American story.
In her book, Mrs. Obama writes this about the speech.
We were now up against a bully, challenging the dignity of our country with practically his every utterance.
Crooked Hillary Clinton.
It was dignity I wanted to make an appeal for.
An appeal she would continue to make. Just weeks before that presidential election, a now infamous tape surfaced of Donald Trump talking about grabbing women by their private parts.
This is not normal. This is not politics as usual. This is disgraceful. It is intolerable.
Sandy Rios with you on Sandy Rios 24/7. Well, it was disgraceful, but I think it's interesting. Now that we know as much as we know about Barack Obama, you might think that some of that was a little disgraceful too. But it's part of the facade, part of the fictitious story and continuing narration of Michelle Obama. Filmmaker Joel Gilbert joined us just a few days ago for part one of this the conversation. Joel has written a book called Michelle Obama 2024. Her real life story and plan for power. And in the book, of course, Joel maintains that she's going to run for president in 2024. And so we examined that. In the first part, we examined her growing up and why her narrative about being mistreated is so false. And as you get into this today, one of the things I wanted to emphasize was where she stands now. What does she believe? And so we've taken some of those instances, and Joel has given us proof of what she is saying now and what's not true. It's pretty amazing. I hope that you'll stay tuned and enjoy. But meanwhile, you can call us at 662-821-2040. You can write me at sandy@afr.net. You might have a few things to say today. You can go to sandyrios.com, listen to the podcast, order the book, check out anything you want to. We're on Facebook, Sandy Rios 24/7. We're also on any podcast platform. AFR.net is home-based, but anywhere you listen to podcasts, there we are. You've heard a lot about saving babies on this show, and that's because it's important to me personally. I'll just be frank with you. We must save these babies. We have to do that. As the left turns up the burner on their attempt to switch the narrative in this country about the value of human life, boy, have they been successful. It's amazing to me how young women have become angry and just risen up to unite over their right, you know, their reproductive right to kill their babies. They call it a health right. Women's health. Who knew? This has nothing to do with women's health. In fact, it's very damaging to women in the long term. Sometimes women are not even able to bear children again. It has a terrible effect on women. Maybe not in the moment when they're teenagers or in the moment. Although I would even argue with myself on that. You go through a procedure like that, it has to affect you deeply. Life does not just go on as usual. And nevertheless, they say this is a women's health right. Well, we have to change that in order to save these babies. And that's where Freeborn comes in. And they show ultrasounds to moms, young moms, older moms, whatever. And women are women. When they see that baby and it looks like them or their partner, they see the thumb sucking, they see the heart beating, they cannot, generally speaking, in their baby's life, unless their hearts are really hard. And so Preborn has been very successful, and they've been successful because you have been so generous. All you have to do is go to preborn.com/Sandy. That's preborn.com/Sandy and make your most generous donation. All right, well, sit back and relax or take out your pen and enjoy part two with Joel Gilbert, who wrote Michelle Obama 2024, her real life story and plan for power on today's edition of Sandy Rios 24/7.
From American Family Radio, Sandy Rios.
We are not called to be nice. We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
I think the most important thing we need to demonstrate to our children is genuineness.
that we actually believe what we say we believe.
A longtime Fox News contributor, Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
Seek justice, not social justice, but God's justice, what's right and what's wrong.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association,
a pro-life radio talk show host.
We've got to say this is the line. Life is sacred.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
All right, Sandy Rios with you. Before we start with our second part with Joel Gilbert, I want you to know that Joel Gilbert is president of Highway 61 Entertainment and the director and writer of political and music documentaries. He's the one who produced Dreams from My Real Father, countering Barack Obama's first book, Dreams from My Father. He also did a documentary called Iran and the Revolt of Islam. He's a very serious film producer. He also traveled a lot to do research for this book on Michelle Obama. He traveled to Martha's Vineyard and Washington, to Chicago, our hometown, to Princeton. He did his homework. And that's what makes Michelle Obama 2024, her real-life story and plan for power, very interesting. So sit back and take out your pen for our second edition with Hollywood film director Joel Gilbert.
Look, Barack grew up in Hawaii with a very creepy 67-year-old man, raised by a 67-year-old man, Frank Marshall Davis, from when he was 9 years old. Spent a lot of time with him every week for hours and hours, getting radicalized by him. Frank Marshall Davis was a pornographer in addition to being a communist, into all kind of weird things. Of course, Ayers and Dorn were into all these radical associations. Obama was going to, you know, the church, of course, with Jeremiah Wright, who had all this anti-American rhetoric, Farrakhan. So the entire history of the Obamas is wrapped up in these anti-American, far-left radical individuals and groups. But for the public story to get power and get elected, they hide all of that. And that's what my book and film, the very first investigation into Michelle Obama's background. The media just have accepted whatever she said as fact. That's why she wrote those autobiographies like Barack. The autobiographies are political documents. They cover up things she doesn't want people to know about, and they create these false stories to mislead people. So when the media wants to write about her life history, they just look in the autobiography and they don't question it. So what I did is a complete deep dive into her real-life story, high school, college, jobs in Chicago, working for Mayor Richard Daley, working for the University of Chicago Medical Center, and I reveal that Michelle pretty much got her revenge on the black community in her Chicago career for what they did to her growing up. She exploited the black community for money. When white liberals had problems with black people, they couldn't hire a white person to do the dirty work. So Michelle always took those jobs. Working for the mayor of Chicago, she was the assistant planning commissioner, and she put through a program to kick 20,000 black people out of their homes at these projects called Cabrini Green near downtown. These projects were built in the 50s, which were not in downtown, but by late 80s, early 90s, now downtown had grown, and the developers like Tony Resco wanted the land to build condos. And Michelle kicked 20,000 black people out of their homes, knocked down their homes, said it's going to be good for you. And having proven she could do the dirty work, the University of Chicago Medical Center hired Michelle to head up something called the Southside Health Collaborative. And they were having problems because the black Southsiders were using their emergency room, and they didn't have good insurance, a lot of them. They were losing money. So if you were black and showed up at the University of Chicago Medical Center, Michelle would put you in a white van and dump you back on the south side at these crappy clinics in these strip malls. And Michelle told the black community, it's going to be good for you. It's better for you. So Michelle denied access to health care to the black community. She kicked them out of their homes to make millions of dollars from the white liberals. Michelle doesn't mention that in her book. She doesn't mention that in her speeches because she doesn't want to lose the opportunity to get black voters to come on board for her and Barack.
It's pretty stunning stuff, Joel. It really is. And I have to say, you know, as you have alluded, you did so much research. You spent time in Chicago, Princeton, where she went to school. I remember her thesis. That was a thesis. It was all racist. It was so shocking about her, like her vile I don't know exactly how to explain it. It's just that she was filled with racism herself. And of all the things she could have written about, given her growing up, this is what she wrote about.
I have to talk about her thesis because I'll have to tell you again, you're kind of off the mark on that. Michelle went to Princeton. She was used to getting A's at her magnet school because she said she had to study twice as much time as everybody else to get A's. She wanted to get A's. That was the, kind of the white girl inside of her wanted to make sure she got A's. She did poorly on testing. She got very low test scores. But when she went to Princeton, she's there for one semester and gets terrible grades. So she runs to the sociology department because it's relatively easy compared to other fields of study at Princeton. Sociology is considered easy. Once she goes to the sociology department, what's even easier than that, she studied, concentrated in African-American studies. You know, imagine what a cop-out that is. You're from Chicago where there's a million black people. You were always very successful in Chicago. And you go to Princeton to study about being black. It's kind of a waste of time, kind of a cop-out. One of her classmates who was not studying sociology wrote afterwards, she said, this is her black classmate from Chicago, said, look, I'm black. I know I'm black. If I wanted that to be the center of my education, I would have gone to Howard University. Why should I study about being black at Princeton? So that's what a cop-out it was for Michelle. She really wanted good grades. So her thesis, she wrote in her junior year, and it's not actually racist. Here's what she said. I'll give you a quote from the thesis. Now, she's in an African-American studies department for several years, and they're teaching her things like this. They're telling her, you're black, you'll only ever be black, and people only ever think of you as black. You're always going to be a stereotype your whole life. You're a black stereotype. You'll never be anything else. That's what they're teaching her. So her thesis is a cry for help. She writes a thesis, and she does a survey of alumni, of black alumni who'd already graduated from Princeton. And she asks them in the survey, are you really just black, or do you care about the black community? Like, they're telling me I'm only going to be black, or do you just want to move on and be part of American society in general? And they all agreed with her, to her relief. They all said, no, we don't care about this black stuff that they were pushing down our throats. We're Americans. We want to be part of America. So Michelle wrote in her thesis, she said, like my white classmates, I want to get a good job in corporate America. I want to succeed. I want to have a good salary. I want to move up the corporate ladder. I'm having the same feelings as my white classmates. So the thesis was a cry for help because she had been stuck in this African-American studies nonsense for 3 years, and she knew from being in Chicago that if she worked hard, she could succeed. It wasn't true what they were indoctrinating her with this stereotype stuff. So that's what the thesis was about. It's Michelle asserting her whiteness and saying, hey, I'm not just a black stereotype like they're telling me. Now, little did she know, later in life, for politics, for Barack and herself, she could draw from that, racist nonsense they were teaching her to try to whip up and inflame the black community when needed. So she's kind of an expert in racial politics from her Princeton professors. But she really is an Oreo, what the kids called her and beat her up for growing up, that she really is. That's what Barack saw in her. Barack is a white guy. He's from, grew up in Hawaii with white grandparents and a white mother. He never knew any black people. He never dated black women. He had nothing to do and no experiences with the black community. And that's what him and Michelle had in common. For Michelle, that made Barack, he wanted for politics, he wanted a black spouse because he thought he might trick the black community into giving a political support if he had a black spouse because he was so insecure about being black. Michelle wanted to feel more white, and that's why she married Barack, because that was the attraction, because he was biracial, and he was someone that wouldn't judge her like other black people did. Black people judged Michelle as being an Oreo. You're really a white girl. Barack had no experiences with the black community. He didn't know one way from the other. So Barack would not judge her, and it made Michelle feel more white marrying somebody who was essentially a white guy from Hawaii, and that was kind of the attraction. So all this BLM stuff from Barack and Michelle with these phony stories about suffering racism are all lies, and they're intended to manipulate black and minority voters to grab their political support, and they're completely fake.
You know, you just, friend, I just read an article that you wrote where you reprint a statement that she made recently where you said really gives us an insight into who she is. I'm trying to find it here. I found it fascinating. Oh, this is, she wrote this on January 2021, and it's published in, I just saw it today. Well, look, somebody sent it to me, and it's published December 26, 2023, sorry, but they sent it to me today. So you quote this thing that she wrote. It's a manifesto about President Trump after January 6th. Can you just share us, this really gives us some insight into who she is now, which is really relevant given that we think she may throw her hat in the ring here. And if she does, I think she'll win, hands down.
Yeah.
So can you give us some insight into that?
So on January 7th, 2021, Michelle published a two-page political manifesto on Twitter talking about her feelings and politics and demanding that social media companies ban Donald Trump from social media, which they did the next day. So that's a real, that little written two-page manifesto is really deserves to be read by everybody. It's on her Twitter account, and you can really understand how political she is, because Michelle has promoted an idea for years that she doesn't like politics somehow. Now, all politicians don't like politics. They just like the power and the celebrity that comes from it. But what happened is, you might remember in 2008, Michelle was giving these incredible political speeches to full houses, stadiums all over the country to support Barack's candidacy. David Axelrod said if everybody could hear Michelle speak, then Barack would be elected. They put her out there as the number one campaign surrogate. But she was so nasty and anti-American. She'd say things like, don't get sick in this country, you can't pay your mortgage, you can't pay for childcare in this country, we're all afraid of each other. It was all this stuff from Bernadine Dorn that she picked up. And then one day she kind of went over the top and said, when Barack won a primary, she said, oh, for the first time in my life, I'm proud of my country. And now she said a lot worse things than that, but the media picked up on that. And the campaign said, look, now people are paying attention to what you're saying. We could lose because of you. So the next day, Michelle got a speechwriter, and she said, oh, I hate politics. I just want to be the mom in chief. So she kind of took a step back and pretended that she wasn't political. But she is very political, and if you read that manifesto she wrote on January 7th, 2021, you can see how political she is. As I mentioned, she started a voter registration organization. Her father was a politician. Her best friend's father's a politician. She married her father, a politician. Michelle is all politics all the time, and that's why I'm convinced that she is aiming to replace Biden in 2024.
You know, that whole turn reminds me a lot of Hillary Clinton, because when she got under fire when she was married to Bill Clinton, remember, they changed her whole appearance and had her. She did an interview about baking cookies. So that's when the things got a little hot for her. So it sounds like that to me. I want to read a few things, if you don't mind, from this statement that you reprinted in your American Thinker article. Because I've been talking a lot about January 6th. I talk about it a lot, Joel, since it happened. And I just think it's important that people see her perspective or hear it, because we're talking in broad terms about her, you know, being political. But this is what she at least says she thinks. After January 6th, she said, what if these rioters had looked like the folks who go to Ebenezer Baptist Church every Sunday? What would have been different? I think we all know the answer. This summer's Black Lives Matter protests were overwhelmingly peaceful. Our nation's largest demonstrations ever, bringing together people of every race and class and encouraging millions to reexamine their own assumptions and behavior. And yet, in city after city, day after day, we saw peaceful protesters met with brute force. We saw cracked skulls and mass arrests. Law enforcement pepper spraying its way through a peaceful demonstration for a presidential photo op. That is so unrelated from reality. That is so removed from reality, Joel. I just want people to hear that. I am stunned by that.
Well, the reason you're stunned is because it's so over the top. Now, the reason it's so over the top is because Michelle is so insecure in her blackness. She knows she was never part of the black community. She knows black people beat her up as a kid. She knows that she exploited the black community and abused them in her career to make money. So she doesn't really know much about the black community. You might remember in 2008 when we were kind of introduced to her on that 60 Minutes interview she did with Barack, and she said to the interviewer, as a black man, Barack could be shot just going to the gas station. Now, that was really stupid. I mean, if you would get shot in Chicago as a black man at the gas station, you'd probably get shot by a black gang member trying to steal your car. But it was just so over the top because she doesn't know better. So that's what you still get from Michelle Obama, is she's so insecure about what she did to the black community in Chicago and how she exploited them, she tries to trick them with these phony, over-the-top, dramatic stories.
But the scary part for me, Joel, is that she's so convincing. That's just one excerpt from that statement that you reprinted, and she has a lot of things in there that are just alarming in their falseness. And yet she says it so calmly. You know, she's so nice, and she'll laugh or get up and do a dance step or so. And that reminds me of her husband, because he has kind of that same gift. Anyway, what makes you so convinced, though? I know you've laid the groundwork for how she's repeating, following the same pattern, but is there... Well, let me put it this way. We have these assurances. Even today, she's not going to run. That's ridiculous. She's not going to run. That sounds like an obvious, what's the word for it? Not a white flag, but an obvious kind of getting you off the subject because people don't want you to really look into it. It just makes, actually, I think, increases the chances that she probably is going to run. I don't know how you feel about that, but I'd like to know.
I'll tell you a story. Charles Ogletree was a Harvard law professor who taught both Barack and Michelle in different years when they both went to Harvard Law, but in different years. And when Barack was elected president, TMZ asked him about the two as students. And he said, between Barack and Michelle, I would have thought it would have been Michelle to run for president, not Barack, because she's so political. From age 4 years old, she was going around with her father trying to manipulate black voters to vote for the white liberal Democrat Party machine in Chicago. Her father's a precinct captain. So she was always the driver in the relationship. It's not dissimilar from the Clinton relationship, where the husband is kind of this disorganized guy who's real friendly and is a good speaker, but doesn't really have much going in terms of understanding how to get ahead. And it was Hillary Clinton and Michelle Obama that kind of pushed them. Michelle got a job working for the mayor of Chicago, Richard Daley. She's the one that got the connection. She's the one that found Valerie Jarrett and introduced her to Barack. Michelle's the one that met Tony Resco. Michelle's the one that got all those connections and said, go here, go there, you need to do this, you need to do that. She was the real driver in the relationship. Michelle is an excellent speaker. She's a better politician than Barack. She comes across more authentic. And, she'll have to, Donald Trump will have to contend with her as the nominee. But the way that I think he can, harm her base of support is if he would just start tweeting things like, Michelle, are you going to apologize for what you did to black people in Chicago? And tweet, Michelle, are you going to apologize for denying access to health care to the black community? Are you going to apologize for kicking them out of their homes? That would open a whole can of worms, because the black community does not like sellouts. And Michelle Obama was a sellout. She sold them out for money. And all these fake stories of racism are all just to cover that up.
Well, the book is called Michelle Obama 2024, Her Real Life Story and Plan for Power. And it's Joel's movie by that same name. Is that available? Is it for pay or is it Netflix, Amazon? Where is it, Joel?
Yeah, the film, there's a film and a book version. The film version, you can actually live stream it and watch it right now online on salemnow.com or Amazon Prime Video. And then the DVD and the book versions are on Amazon.com.
Oh, that's great. Okay, that's great. That's where people can find it easily. So, Joel, are you getting any traction with this book? I think you are. I see your name everywhere. But are you being, first of all, pummeled in Hollywood? And do you feel like you have acceptance from conservative leaders? for what you've written here?
Well, I can tell you that, like most places, including New York City, there's a ton of conservatives. And in Hollywood, people in Hollywood are not all from West L.A. They're from all over the country. They come here from Missouri, and, you know, Brad Pitt's from Missouri, and there's actors and producers from all over the country. So there's a tremendous number of conservatives, actually. They just don't talk about it too much in public because they don't want to lose jobs. But there's certainly a lot of support out here, believe it or not, even in Hollywood. I live in Ventura County, which is just a mile or two outside of L.A. County, and it's very conservative. So you'd be surprised how much, how many people that everywhere do support my work and research and want to know the truth, because I think Barack Obama caused a tremendous amount of damage to the country. Both Obamas did. When they were elected to the White House in 2008, the polls showed that 80% of both blacks and whites thought race relations were good. I grew up in the 80s in Tennessee, in the South. Black and white kids all together. I never heard the N-word, you know. This is in the 80s. Now, what the Obamas did in the White House, they ruined race relations in this country. When Barack was trying to get elected, reelected rather, in 2012, it wasn't really sure that the black community would support him because everything had gotten worse. The economy had gotten worse, jobs, illegals were taking jobs, driving down wages, and that's when Obama picked up on the George Zimmerman shooting of Trayvon Martin, and he said, if I had a son, he'd look like Trayvon. He sent Al Sharpton and the FBI down there, and they created a fake case to prosecute and arrest Zimmerman. I've covered that in my movie called The Trayvon Hoax, where I showed that the key witness, Rachel Gentel, the hefty Haitian girl that claimed that she was Trayvon's girlfriend and was on the phone with him, and she heard things over the phone which were different from the eyewitnesses, and they used her statements to arrest Zimmerman. It turns out Rachel Gentel was not Trayvon's girlfriend. She wasn't on the phone with him. She was a fake witness. And I found the real girlfriend, and she had refused to lie to the police. But Obama picked up on that case and embraced Black Lives Matter was based on that case. Obama embraced Black Lives Matter, brought him to the White House, and created all this racial division such that by the time the Obamas left the White House, the attitudes in the country had flipped. Only 20% of blacks and whites thought race relations were good, and 80% thought they were bad. So the Obamas caused tremendous damage, all because of their insecurity over their blackness, the fact that both of them are not really had anything to do with the black community in their lives and just wanted to use them for power. And I think that's what Michelle is up to again right now.
One last thing, Joel. I want to say to people that you are so careful in your reporting. And you've done the work because there's so many conspiracy. And I look, there's enough conspiracies that can most conspiracies theories now I think are true, but silly things that are said about Michelle Obama that are not, you know, about her gender and all of this stuff, silly stuff. Joel is not in that category. He has actually researched this and researched it deeply. And so I recommend Michelle Obama 2024, her real life story and plan for power, and also the movie, which I haven't seen the movie, just the book. And so I want to do that. Joel, thank you. You contributed so much to the country. And I think whatever happens as things unfold over the coming months between now and November, this will be a good tutorial for all of us who are trying to make our way through this confusing time. So thank you very much, Joel Gilbert. Thank you, sir.
All right. Enjoy the conversation. Thanks so much.
Thank you. Sandy Rios on Sandy Rios 24/7.
This is Sandy Rios 24/7 on American Family Radio.
We are so privileged to be working with Preborn. I talked about it all the time, but I want to just say, if you would consider a leadership gift to save babies in a bigger way, and $28 is one ultrasound, and that's a wonderful contribution, but some of you might be able to afford more. Your tax-deductible donation of $5,000 will sponsor Preborn's entire network for 24 hours, helping to rescue 200 babies. All you have to do is go to preborn.com/Sandy. That's preborn.com/Sandy. Hi, this is Sandy Rios, and I miss you in the mornings. But now I'm hosting a podcast, Sandy Rios 24/7, which is available at AFR.net and SandyRios.com. Well, I finally finished that book. God's Velvet Hammer chronicles God's call in my life from a small town girl to Berlin, Germany, Radio Moscow to North Korea to Washington, D.C. I talk about Sasha Girl. That was my disabled daughter. I talk about I've Got the Music in Me. That's a chapter on my music life. Lost in India and Other Adventures is hilarious. You won't want to miss it. I talk about my sweetheart, The Blessing of Bruce. And then a mysterious chapter called My Green Face and the End of It All. Oh, I think you'll enjoy it. Like the Apostle Paul, these are my shipwrecks and my adventures. All for Christ and His kingdom. God's Velvet Hammer is available wherever books are sold. And remember, Sandy Rios 24/7 is available at AFR.net and SandyRios.com. Hi, this is Sandy Rios. A lot of Christians would be shocked to learn they are personally profiting from abortion and pornography. It's unnerving to realize just how many companies and corporations are actively involved in unbiblical practices. To help cut through the red tape, there is a great option known as Timothy Plan. Timothy Plan is the pioneer in biblically responsible investing. Timothy Plan carefully filters out companies involved in practices Scripture tells us to avoid. We are in an all-out culture war. One powerful way to make a difference is to put our money where our values are. Please go to timothyplan.com/Sandy. That's timothyplan.com/Sandy. Or call 1-800-TIM-PLAN. That's 1-800-846-7526. Discover how to be a biblically responsible investor.
Before investing, carefully consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses of the investment company. This and other important information can be found in the fund's prospectus. To obtain a copy, visit timothyplan.com or call 800-846-7526. Read each prospectus carefully before investing.
I've known this woman since I was a baby.
We were high school. 14 years old.
What do you think of this guy, 65 years?
I love this man. I grew up in this man's house. I've seen it all.
Michelle loved Santita and found it exciting to hang around Jesse's house, where she met many elites and political leaders, and she watched Jesse lay the groundwork for his political campaign for president, coming a few years later in 1984.
Okay, so that's the voice of Joel Gilbert in the documentary Michelle Obama 2024. And of course, he's referring to Jesse Jackson and his daughter, Sunita, who was Michelle's best friend. That's what she was talking about. So, Bruce, that brings it back home to Chicago, doesn't it, sweetheart?
It certainly does.
Yeah.
Jesse Jackson, I'm sorry. This is my personal wish that if I could have taken over the FBI Chicago office for a week, one of the two targets would have been Jesse Jackson and his organization, because it is nothing but a shakedown operation that hides behind a religious exemption.
But that's whose home she grew up in. And, of course, boy, she had some terrible influences, didn't she? I think her folks must have been pretty good influences. I didn't see anything in Joel's writing that made me think that, well, their dad was a Democratic operative and worked for the white machine of Daley, you know, to collect and recruit black voters for him. So that's how she grew up.
Yeah, and if you wonder why the Democrats have no problem with election stealing, just think about that. Michelle was schooled by a Chicago police precinct captain, her father. And the precinct captain, his job depends on getting the people out to vote and getting them to vote for the right candidate.
Exactly.
So it's not done fairly. The money's passed out. Rides are given that shouldn't be. There's a lot of incentives given by these precinct captains.
I'll never forget when Hiram Crawford, who was a good friend of mine, he was a black pastor in Chicago. He was a tower of a man. He was a presence. I can still remember him on television confronting the city council. He had so much boldness, and he spoke the truth to his people. He was on the South Side. He died many years ago. His wife and friend, anyway, they were friends of mine for years. He was not like that. He would counter Jesse Jackson. He was a man of integrity. By the way, Jesse Jackson wore that bloody shirt for Martin Luther King's assassination for days because he made a lot of political bones on that on purpose.
For context, if you remember, Dr. King was assassinated in a motel standing out on the patio in front of his room. And Jesse Jackson was in the vicinity when Dr. King was killed, but he was not actually struck by any of the blood from Dr. King. And what he did is he rubbed his hand on some of the blood from Dr. King and smeared it on his shirt. And that was really how he gained prominence, at least in my remembrance, running around, like you say, in that shirt for days, talking about how the blood of Dr. King had landed on him.
Yes. So that's one thing. And then we talked a little bit with Joel Bruce about how the Obamas made everything racial. And you guys, we both have a lot of feelings about that. I remember I was so upset about that. And I used to say that this has divided us. They are dividing us, meaning black and white Americans. They just, it was like a scab that they loved to poke. And they were not honest about it. They overstated it. Yes, there was racism. Yes, there was slavery. Yes, there were all the bad things. I lived through that too. Not the hangings, but not the slavery, but things that happened later on in my generation. But they made it worse. They made up stories. And so I want you to hear this clip, Bruce. This was an interview that Michelle did with, I believe, NBC after they were out of the White House. And just listen to the twist on this. This has to do with their time in office. This is clip 6.
In her book, she writes,
"Our presence in the White House had been celebrated by millions of Americans, but it also contributed to a reactionary sense of fear and resentment among others. The hatred was old and deep and as dangerous as ever."
There's some people that feel that the seed of discontent that led to Donald Trump being elected president, that the seed of that discontent happened during your husband's presidency.
I would like to indulge the question, but it requires a level of speculation about how people are feeling and thinking that I don't have. And I think that we're going to have to figure that out as a nation.
So in other words, his presidency was well supported. People were excited. But because he was president, when Trump came in, it caused racial tensions, a resentment that he'd been elected and served. That's what she's saying. You know, they went on to make millions of dollars, write books. I don't know. What is she talking about?
You know, that is preposterous because at the time Obama was elected, he was elected not once, but twice. At the times he was running, I would speculate that the black population in the United States was approximately 12%. Now, a lot of people that were not black voted for Barack Obama in order for him to win not one, but two terms. I find this so offensive because, you know, first off, the Obamas kind of played the guilt card, the white guilt card, and they got what they wanted from white people. They got their votes, and then they turned on them and said that the white people were racist.
Well, it's interesting that Joel should make the point that both Barack and Michelle used the black community and turned on them. It's like, and now they turn on, you know, Barack is half white. So they turn on everybody. It seems to me it's self-interest. And I have one other, actually, I'm not going to play this clip, but she does another interview where she's with this NBC reporter, and they're driving through Chicago's South Side, and Michelle's pointing out how poor and how dangerous it is. And then she points out, now that's where, and she gave a name, some girl, young girl, they showed a picture of her, pretty girl, black girl who was very good in school, who had been shot. And Michelle goes on and on about it, but her point is, well, that could have been me. She could have been me. That could have been me. That was her main point. It wasn't about, I didn't sense real grief for the girl, other than it could have been me. That's just a sort of strange spin on something like that.
The Obamas remind me of the Clintons in very many ways of that somehow or another, they always twist something to become about them. And if it's a terrible situation, they've always been in that themselves, according to them. Yeah. And, you know, I find it so offensive that Michelle Obama talks about dignity, and she used the term, when they go low, we go high. Oh, really? Almost simultaneous with that pronouncement by her in 2008, her husband made a statement that said, if they bring a knife to the fight, we bring a gun. And that was in the time when we were having many mass shootings, things of, you know, they were all about gun control and all that. And then he makes that statement.
Yeah, I know. People conveniently forget. And when she talks about what a disgrace Trump was, and Trump did do some disgraceful things. There's no question about that. But Barack Obama's private life that we know quite a bit about, you know, they present themselves as this family, kind of like the Kennedys did. This Camelot, this beautiful family, when in truth, you know, there was a very different story privately. And I'm not saying it's the same story. It's a different story. But it is not exactly like, it's not a story of a Camelot, a black Camelot either. So it's just, anyway, I hope this has helped this conversation. And if you want to know more about it, I can't say enough about Joel's book. It's very well written and it's fascinating. It's Michelle Obama 2024, her real life story and plan for power. Also, you heard him say that the DVD, the movie is at Amazon or salemnow.com, just a lot of places that you can access it. And I just recommend that you do that because she may be our president, you know? She just might be. All right, well, thank you for listening. Thank you for listening, honey. Thank you for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
Bringing your Chicago wisdom.
All right, such as it is.
Such as it is. All right, thank you so much for listening to today's edition of Sandy Rios 24/7.